The regular season is heating up, new stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let it fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half and the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
When I'm walking beside her, people tell me I'm lucky. Yes, I know I'm a lucky guy. The first time I was lonely without her, can't stop thinking about her now. Every little thing she does for me, yeah. And you know the thing she does for me, ooh. When I'm with her, I'm happy. Just to know that she loves me. Yes, I know that she loves me now. There is one thing I'm sure of. I will love her forever. For I know love will never die. Every little thing she does for me, yeah. And you know
hello and welcome to SATB 225B, a continuation of the conversation with Gary Wenstrup. Began last week with the Beatles Olympiad, running through the first two Beatle albums with our gold, silver, and bronze awards for particular tracks, continuing on now with A Hard Day's Night and Beatles for Sale, which is as far as we got in the course of, I guess it was a couple hours we were talking. I was going to point out the people because, you know, we can never now, this point going forward, ever be very far away from the Get Back documentary, which has nothing to do with the topic of this show. But I was gladdened in there to see. It was something I had heard, of course, in the Niagaras, but now getting to see the visual to go with it was really cool. And that is when George brings up the topic of when they're talking about what they're going to do for the show, and he's wondering aloud if they're going to do any golden oldies, meaning stuff from their back catalog to give the audience something familiar to grab onto. And he suggests not a hit single, not a big famous album track or anything like that. He suggests Every Little Thing, which I thought was really a cool choice on his part, just giving a little insight into the esteem he must have had for that song, which is as obscure as it gets. It is an album track, was never a single, never a B-side, not anything they ever played live, from Beatles for Sale. And I was thinking, I thought I was the only one, apart from the band, yes, that had any special feeling for that song. But there you go, George of the Beatles bringing it up to perform in 1969, and he's met with blank faces from Paul and John. So that was funny, for what it's worth. But we continue. And I guess here we are at the end of a momentous year, 2021, going into what will hopefully be an even bigger year in 2022. Not a leap year, not bigger by a day, but just event-wise. Things are in the pipeline. Nothing I can talk about now, but eventually. Anyway, thank you all new listeners who might have been turned on by the Peter Jackson series or the Forbes article. And of course, the people that have been with us all along that have been supporting this show and making it possible. And by your kind words and support and comments, really giving this the oxygen it needs to keep going, because it is a lot of work. It's a labor of love. And I continue to do it with all the time I could put into it at the expense of churning out books, which I'd be doing if I didn't have the podcast. But there will be more books coming, I assure you, in next year for sure. Anyway, anytime I think about, you know, why am I doing this, it's the notes and things that come my way from you guys that keep it worth doing for sure. And I love doing it anyway, but that's definitely an added incentive to the proceedings. So here we are, the second hour of the conversation with Gary, and we will return to the Get Back documentary in the next round of shows, as well as other topics, because God knows there's plenty to talk about in Beatle World. Wishing all of you a wonderful, happy, safe new year, and a better year than we've had in the last couple, hopefully for everybody. And thanks again for all the support and listening to this show. Thanks much.
End of intermission. Part two.
All right, so that covers your silver, and gold, right? So
my bronze was Tilda Rischew, my silver, Little Child, and my gold, Not a Second Time.
Okay, so Little Child, that's really an interesting selection.
The Beatles was tough because there's so many great performances. I really love Devil in Her Heart. You Really Got a Hold on Me, another great soulful performance.
Yeah.
Roll Over Beethoven, I always like their version of that. It Won't Be Long, amazing performance.
Yeah, that's true. So I agree. Which leads to my bronze, It Won't Be Long, my silver, Not a Second Time, and my gold, All My Loving.
You notice nobody picked Hold Me Tight. Well, how would that be? You know what song I was never, I respect more than I enjoy? Their reading of Please Mr. Postman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it on paper, good. But I don't seek it out. What I didn't mention, and it would have been a close second if we'd done a metal beneath bronze, or maybe somewhere I might have co-ranked it if I wanted to give myself some latitude. Don't Bother Me, I think, is an amazing record.
Since she's been gone, I want no one to talk to me. It's not the same, but I'm to blame, it's plain to see. So go away, leave me alone, don't bother me. I know I'll never be the same if I don't get her back again, because I know she'll always be the only girl for me.
And it's his first, and it's probably stronger than the stuff, the best that he's going to do for the next couple of years.
I would say
it's
stronger than, I agree with you. For his earlier writing efforts, certainly You Know What to Do, which they rightly shelved. You Liked Me Too Much, I like more as a performance than as a composition.
Sounds awkward
to me. A little forced, right?
It always sounded awkward. And I would rank Don't Bother Me above.
I Need You, I'm fond of. But I think if I had to quantify art, I'd give it to Don't Bother Me. It's just more interesting to me.
I totally agree. It's got a good rhythm sound to it, the drumming or the maybe there's some bongos on it. I'm not quite sure.
It's just
got
dark.
A cool sound to it.
It just, there's something about it.
Yeah,
right. It said this in one of my books that his earliest compositions tended to denote disapproval. Don't Bother Me. You Like Me Too Much. Think for Yourself. If I Needed Someone. He's giving the world his stereotype right there.
Yeah. I Look at You, I'll See the Love There That's Sleeping. Like, come on. Right. I expect more. Yeah. All right, should we move on to A Hard Day's Night? And if you struggled with the Beatles, I struggled big time with Hard Day's Night. It's sort of a coin flip between my favorite Beatles album, this being one of them, Sgt. Pepper being another. That's another conversation.
Sure.
But I love this record, start to finish. So this was hard for me. So my bronze goes to If I Fell. The bottom line, it's the harmonies. I mean, they're just exquisite. They pay close attention to the Everly Brothers. I almost think the lyric exists just so they can harmonize. I'm not sure he gave much thought to the lyric because he hopes that the new girl will treat him better than the old girl, but he's concerned that the old girl's feelings are going to get hurt when she gets dumped. So wait a minute. To me,
that is incredibly insightful and sophisticated. See, you're looking at that as awkward, but it's like, man, that is so real. I don't mean him personally, but I'm saying he's describing a situation that happens in life. You don't think so?
Maybe it's my nastiness as a human. I can't see myself being unhappy with the way I'm being treated by a girl, and for that reason, moving on from that girl, and then feeling, say, oh, actually, now that I say that.
You bastards.
Maybe I can empathize. Maybe I can empathize. Okay, all right. I pull back.
When you say it out loud.
Opinion. You're right.
When you say it out loud, it all makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know what? That was your bronze?
That's my bronze.
That was my gold.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you got the inherent Lennon soulfulness, whether it's real or not. And I don't think it's necessarily written from life.
Yeah.
But to me, it's a great social insight for the reasons I described. It shows, you haven't been great to me. This hasn't been ideal. I'm moving on, but I still care about you. And to me, that's some sophistication in what's otherwise a throwaway ballad. I love the opening. That's such a throwback to 30s, 40s music where you have this intro that has nothing to do with the whole rest of the song. We know the Paul voice crack in the last bridge.
Yeah.
So it's got that little humanity to it that I like, but it's a fun song to decipher the harmony line too, because he goes from lead vocal to bottom harmony. It's very cool the way they put that together. And it makes me wonder how much did they intuit that themselves, or did George Martin guide them? It's like, here's the way to do it, boys.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before, and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. If I trust in you, oh please, don't run and hide. If I love you too, oh please, don't hurt my pride like her. 'Cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad if I in vain. So I hope you see that I would love to love you, and that she will cry when she learns we are two. 'Cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad if our new love was in vain. So I hope you see that I would love to love you, and that she will cry when she learns we are two. If I fell in love with you,
it It's a use of 12-string guitar that doesn't come overtly off as 12-string guitar. It's more subdued, so it's not so birdsy sounding. I don't know. I mean, there's a million things to like about it. It's one song that even now comes on the radio, I'll turn it up.
Sure. So that's your goal. Do you want to name your bronze?
Sure. Why don't I name my bronze? When I get home. No. Listeners, that song, I will have you know, as much as I thought, and I still do, that the hook is awkward. The words are a little clumsy. I've been giving it a lot of thought, and I'm looking forward to the day when I can perform with other musicians again, because I'm seeing a way that song could be played and it'll be a little bit closer to realizing the potential that's there. I would love to have a crack at that. So you've been warned. Whoa. There are songs on this album that I would have to say I liked more when I was younger than I do now. Maybe they've just gotten a little tired for me. I don't want to make it sound like I'm denigrating them. I still like them, but songs I used to be a lot more wildly enthusiastic about, like I Should Have Known Better and Anytime at All, those were two that I used to like a lot more than I do now. But my bronze would have to be You Can't Do That. And that's because I think it's a great performance, it's a great song that works live, and I'm really happy that they did include it in their sets in 64. It's a fun song to play and sing. Again, you got the soulfulness, a wounded John issuing a threat. A lot of women I know nowadays, here's my problem with that, okay? Yes. Yeah.
You can tell Robert's about to go off.
With all due respect to people rendering judgment on things that maybe are looked at as past crimes that were not called out on. It's like, how could they accept that now? I don't think it's fair or appropriate to apply the standards of the current day on things that happened in a different world. To wit, I watch and I have free time, which is almost never, but you know, if I have time to kill, I have in the past year taken in an awful lot of something that I never watched back in the day. And that is reruns of Match Game. I never ever watched it.
Okay.
And watching it now, it's brilliant. It's captivating. It's fun to watch these minor celebrities of the day just having at each other. And it is so wildly sexist and inappropriate and borderline racist. It's unbelievable that this ever existed. But there's some nuance here. And I hate when people render knee-jerk judgments. For example, movie from 74. That people say, oh, how did that movie ever get made? You can never make it now. Blazing Saddles. It's not a racist movie. You're missing the point if you think that it is. It's a movie satirizing racism. And if that's too fine a distinction for you to pick up on, then go find something to watch on Netflix. But it's genius. And that is why it is of lasting value and why it resonated with people. I mean, for God's sake, Richard Pryor co-wrote it. So the same way that I resist, I'm going to push back on people saying, well, John, being misogynist or whatever, maybe Run for Your Life is a better example of that. But even then, he's riffing on an old Elvis song that nobody thought too deeply about. I don't think he really meant he was going to kill his girl for cheating on him or talking to another man. So that may make people uncomfortable now. Fair enough. But if you're going to start rendering judgment on stuff, then start with every country record, every blues record. What are you going to have left to enjoy? Okay. So you can't do that. I don't think about the lyrics that hard. That's one song where I don't think about the lyrics that hard. I think about the performance and the sound. That's really what I'm going for. I doubt that John put that much thought into it other than I'm going to channel Wilson Pickett here. That was his thought in real time as he's writing a song, Four in a Bar, Cowbell, all that sort of thing. I don't think that he was making a statement on men-women relations. He was mining a familiar trope that that's what goes on in these relationship songs. Like, if I catch you cheating, I'm going to harm you. I don't think he meant any deeper that. I don't think there's any real conviction behind that. Some people would say, well, you're aware that he hit women, aren't you, Robert Rodriguez? And that's a separate issue. You separate life from art, or again, what is going to be left to enjoy? And I'm not anyway defending him, covering up from. I don't think it's meant to be a weighty statement on anything. It's just a great sounding record. He could have been singing anything.
Yeah. So I love the record as well. There's an aggressiveness to it. There's an aggressive sound to it. And that's probably maybe because John's playing guitar. I push back a little bit with you I remember hearing this as a kid and feeling there was just a danger or a
malevolence
that made me uncomfortable. I fully understand what you're saying about how we view history and what's appropriate at the time that's later not appropriate. But there does seem to be a pattern, you know, with a song like this and Run for Your Life. And then, of course, he freely admits it in Jealous Guy. You know, there seems to be a pattern here. So that makes me a little uncomfortable.
And you're perfectly valid in feeling that. I, as a kid listening to it, the thing that stood out for me in terms of questionable lines was Everybody's Green. I thought, that's a funny thing to say.
Why did that strike you as funny?
I mean, it's because I understood intellectually what he was saying. Green would envy. But it's just a funny, it's like, it was one of those phrases, like when the cows come home, it's like, nobody talks like that in real life. Oh, they're so green. Yeah. Because green can mean something else too. It can mean unsophisticated. I think at an early age, I kind of compartmentalized, well, this is a song I enjoyed so much, I'm not going to think about the words, because if I do, it'll ruin the enjoyment. And so I did. But yes, you mentioned earlier the guitar solo. And that's another thing that I think before I actually knew it was John playing it, that I thought, well, this is different. This is cool. And the aggression in his vocal, you know, if you're going to have aggression with John Lennon, I'd much rather it be with his vocal than anything else he's capable of. There's nothing wrong with that. To me, it's just meant to be a listening experience, a performance experience if he's doing it live. And I don't give it any further gravity than that.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. My silver is one that you've already dismissed. I should have known better. So perhaps you've matured. And actually, you know, you talk about quantifying things. My bottle, it just makes me happy. There's an open-heartedness to it. There's an excitement to it. You know, he sings, "Give me more," and I want to hear more when he sings that. It's the flush of new love, loud and clear on that song. And then John can deliver a falsetto of his own, you know, how he holds mine, or how he goes falsetto with mine. It's got great energy.
There's nothing you said there that's wrong. Again, this was a tough album. There's a lot of great material on this album. To not include my top three, Can't Buy Me Love or Things We Said Today. Even I'm Happy Just to Dance With You, I really enjoy as a record. That's a great performance. But this would be one more. And I have to ask you, do you have a preference between the Hard Day's Night album version and I assume at some point in your life you heard the Hey Jude album?
Yeah.
So Hey Jude had the stereo mix that was done. That's got the harmonica riff at the beginning that breaks off on the fourth one.
I should have known better with a girl like you, that I would love everything that you do, and I do.
Robert, I'd have to go back and listen to them. It's been ages since I've done that, so I'm not qualified to answer. I'd have to go back and listen.
Oh, I
obviously have an opinion, so go ahead.
I prefer the stereo mix, the so-called mistake version, where it gets winded or whatever.
Pardon me? Do you prefer it?
Because it's more interesting.
Okay.
And when, because he's varying the repetition versus when it's just straight repetition, to me, it's just a little more boring or predictable.
And I enjoy the false start of I've Just Seen a Face. Am I remembering right from the Rubber Soul record? Looking through you. Sorry. That kind of false.
Totally agree.
It's intriguing.
The song is incomplete without it. It's like when those knuckleheads did Get Back Naked and took the coda off of Get Back. They're like, no, finish the damn song.
Yeah. Okay. Your silver now?
My silver. And this was a tough one because it vied with gold, but ultimately I came down on silver for I'll Be Back. Always love that song. And that's one, thankfully, I haven't grown a diminished appreciation for. I loved it from the first time I heard it, and I still do. I get intellectually where John said that was me trying to do Del Shannon, alternating between the major and minor and all that stuff. Fine. That doesn't enhance it or diminish it in any way for me. I too like the alternating major minor. It is something that intrigued me. But I love the fact, we talked about this back in the day when we did the show on middle eights, but the three times the middle eight comes up and he sings it differently each time. And holding the note in the middle one, again, the tear in his voice, you believe it's genuine. He's channeling something, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with his real life. It's just a song. He's able to tap into that. The wistfulness, I guess, is the word to describe it. And it's just an amazing song. And I think, again, it hasn't aged at all. You know, for Fab Four Con Jam, again, we had somebody perform it. That's absolutely a song that I've, in situations where I'm jamming with friends, we play that song. It's a fun one to sing, a fun one to perform. So I love that song.
Yeah. It happens to be my goal. So I'll sort of segue into that. I totally agree with you. And what's weird about the song that's got verses, and to your point, the middle eight repeats three times. There's no chorus.
There's no guitar solo either.
No, there's not. So it's a curious creation. It's always been strange to me that such a regularly, I would say generally downbeat, not generally, it's a downbeat song. You've got this joyous movie, A Hard Day's Night, and the joyous record that goes with it, not in A Hard Day's Night, the movie, but the album ends with it. All this incredible energy and joy and youthfulness, and then the album closes, not unlike, you know, using Not a Second Time, with this sort of downer. You feel his pain in his vocal. He's stuck with a girl he loves who doesn't love him. He's tried to shock her by leaving, and she's totally unaffected, which is why the song feels so unresolved, because he doesn't know what to do next. The John Paul harmonies, once again, incredible. And here's, you talk about jamming with it. I'm curious your opinion on this. I love that heavy guitar strum that happens at about the 3 second mark. So I think it's like he hits two notes and then it's a big strum of that sound. I love sound. There's a richness to it. And to my ears, but I'm not a musician, to my ears, it sounds like the same sort of deep strum that George uses on My Sweet Lord.
It's a big strum, all right.
And I'm sorry, I'm not musically sophisticated enough to know if it's the same chord or anything like that. Rich acoustic strum sound that
It's
just
beautiful
love.
In terms of the guitar sound and tone and everything. And I think that's probably, as I'm thinking about it now, looking outside my own perspective on it, why it has drawn the notice of so many other musicians. You just want to grab that and experience it yourself. And plenty of other people have. You know, it's just one of those songs that anytime I get around anybody, it's playing Beatles songs, especially if you're doing a Beatles set. That's always included in it, I think. And people just do a great number on it. If you've got another singer, great, because then you can do that harmony. It's deceptive. It doesn't call a great deal of attention to itself as like, oh, hit single material or anything like that. Yet it still gets played on the radio. Just another underrated Beatles track. Amazing the riches that they populated their albums with.
Absolutely. Because when you compare it to things like, you know, Can't Buy Me Love or A Hard Day's Night, this does feel like a lesser good, but we love it.
They put their finger on something there, because the first two albums, they went out with the big bang, Twist and Shout and Money. This one, you start with the big bang and you end with this unresolved trailing off, just like Meet the Beatles does.
Yeah.
And there's power in that, clearly, because we're still talking about it. We're still feeling it. So they recognized you don't have to be obvious. You don't have to go out. This is not a stage show. And there are stage shows that do end with a whimper, you know, so it just leaves you thinking and sustaining the mood in your own head. So we're intellectualizing the hell out of this, but I think we're just trying to put our finger on the magic, and the magic is undeniably there.
That's a good point. In our conversation, we are trying to put our finger on the magic, and it's just there sometimes. It's just there. It's just there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, if you break my heart, I'll go, but I'll be back again. 'Cause I told you once before goodbye, but I came back again. Yes, I'm the one who wants you. Oh, 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 you could find better things to do than to break my heart again. This time I will try to show that I'm not trying to pretend. That if I ran away from you, that you would want me to, that I got a big surprise. Oh, 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 you could find better things to do than to break my heart again. This time I will try to show that I'm not trying to pretend. I wanna go, but I hate to leave you. You know I hate to leave you. Oh, 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 you. If you break my heart, I'll go, but I'll be back again.
Gold was If I Fell, silver I'll Be Back, and bronze was You Can't Do That.
Got it. So my bronze, If I Fell, my silver, I Should Have Known Better, and my gold, I'll Be Back.
Interesting the overlap we have in some of these, even if we rank them differently.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And so the things that you're picking, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get it. You know,
yeah, it's and not same with you. I mean, I get you're it. Talking about I Should Have Known Better. I remember when you're describing it, that's exactly how I felt when I was a teenager listening to it. And I know that a lot of people tend to prefer their first exposure to whatever something is. And so in my case, I may be guilty that it was on the Hey Jude album that I first heard I Should Have Known Better with that harmonica difference. So it's stuck with me ever since. But that's not true of, say, I Feel Fine and She's a Woman, which I first heard on Beatles 65, slathered with echo. Once I heard the clean British version, it's like, oh, I like these better. So it's not always the first you hear. I think it just depends on case-by-case basis what you're talking about.
Yeah. All right. So it's interesting you made the point about, or we both were kind of talking about, I'll Be Back kind of mm-hmm. leaves you hanging a little bit. And maybe it's an indication of Beatles' increasing sophistication. This is over-intellectualizing after the fact, but sort of setting the stage for, we didn't resolve this album because there's more to come, and we're going to go deeper than we've gone before, which maybe sets up Beatles for Sale. As tired as that record may be, it's an indication that we're going someplace more confused, I would say. Enthusiasm that exists within A Hard Day's Night is totally, in my opinion, totally or quite absent when we get to Beatles for Sale.
I think that's the overall perception most people have, and I've been guilty of that too. You know, it starts with the album cover, or the looking wiped. And then, you've got the fact, what is there, like seven cover tunes on there when they just completed an album prior to with 13 originals. But then if you go into it track by track, certainly the enthusiasm and energy is there in situations where appropriate. I think in a way, as a listening experience, it's greater than the sum of its parts. A lot of people felt through the years historically has gotten a bad rap and that people need to hear it with fresh ears. It is what it is, which is a completely meaningless thing to say, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not slamming the record.
Yeah.
I do think the individual parts, in my opinion, are better than the whole, but I guess we'll sort of dive into that as we talk about it. So I'll start with my bronze, which is I Don't Want to Spoil the Party. And maybe this is one of my issues with this album. I'm not crazy about George's country twangy guitar. It's just not a sound that appeals to me. It's not a sound that appeals to me on a John song. You mentioned this before, that John harmonizes with himself on the verses, and then he harmonizes with Paul on the bridge. Both work, but when you hear John and Paul harmonize together, it's just better. It's just better.
I've had a drink or two and I don't care. There's no fun in what I do when she's not there. I wonder what went wrong. I've waited far too long. I think I'll take a walk and look for her. Though tonight she's made me sad, I still love her. If I find her, I'll be glad. I still love her. I don't want to spoil the party, so I'll go.
I think for me as a kid, to hear the reference about I've had a drink or two just makes it more adult. And maybe that again speaks to my feeling that we've changed when we go from A Hard Day's Night, all that innocence, to something like Beatles for Sale, where now we've got drinking sort of referenced, and that it changes mm-hmm. perception. To me, the song captures the anticipation that I would feel, that you go to a party, high school, you're all hyped to see a particular girl, maybe dressed that way, you maybe got an open mind, something you want to say to her, and then she doesn't show, and the deflation that occurs from that. I feel like there's more to this in John's singing than what I just described, but I can sort of relate to that feeling. As much as I love the song, and it's my bronze, it still feels like a bit of a curiosity as opposed to a straight, unadorned, or enthusiastic mm-hmm. performance of a song.
This was a tough one for me, personally, to not make the top three, because I've always loved it. And I've always loved George's guitar sound on it, funnily enough, to each his own. Just the attack in his picking is something you don't hear a lot of. And to me, it sort of underscores the emotion that John is expressing in his singing. He's agitated. He's deflated. But there's a part of him that's got this fighting spirit there. But I think that George was particularly adept at picking up on whatever John's emotions were and whatever he was singing about, which most of the time didn't have to be any basis in real life. Whether he had these experiences or not, I think they would have been well past him by the time he wrote the song. And George was able to tap into that and use that to sort of make the song bigger than it might have been. Something that comes to my mind when thinking about George enhancing what John's singing about, Your Blues, where he's really putting out there the sound of agony, of existential agony. But anyway, so I don't have a problem with the song. It's interesting that this is...
Sorry to interrupt you, but just the guitar sound. You like the sound. It's not a sound that appeals to me. To me, it makes the song a little on the hokey side. It takes it in a country twangy place that just doesn't work for me emotionally.
No, that's interesting. The point you're interjecting is because I was not historically a big fan of country music, even less so anything produced after 1970. Case-by-case basis, there's things I can find reason to enjoy. Any country I like at all tends to be more old school 50s, 60s type stuff, which just certainly falls within the realm of. But I don't listen to the song and think, they're doing country now. I get where people would pull that out of it. But I think, if anything, more rockabilly. And that's maybe hair-splitting semantics or whatever.
Yeah.
To me, it's a Beatle performance, pure and simple. It's not like they're having this vocal affectation, say when they're doing Sure to Fall, you know, something like that. That's a lot more straight-up country. That doesn't diminish it for me. To me, I've always liked the sound of it overall. I like the guitar sound. It's intriguing to me that he harmonized with Paul here, which is, of course, better, but it's interesting he's harmonizing with himself here. It's almost like, and this is me as a kid sort of trying to find meaning where some might not exist, where you've got your inner voice and your outer voice. And I saw it as like sort of not quite split personality, but like having an inner dialogue with himself. That was how I sort of rationalized it as a kid. And, you know, that might not make any sense to anybody or sound stupid, but with the Beatles, you're just trying to find meaning always.
I don't want to spoil the party, so I'll go. I would hate my disappointment to show. She turns up while I'm gone, please let me know. Though tonight she's made me sad, I still love her. If I find her, I'll be glad. I still love her. Though I've had a drink or two and I don't care. There's no fun in what I do if she's not there.
So that was your bronze?
That's my bronze. What's your bronze?
My bronze. This might be slightly shocking to people because I know how esteemed the song is, and that is No Reply. Always love the song. It's a powerful opener. It's very succinct, great bridge, great harmony from Paul. Another situation I can't imagine John ever really lived. And he had said it was based on Silhouettes, the old Ray's song.
Took a walk and past your house late last night. All the shades were pulled and drawn way down tight. From within a dim light cast two silhouettes on the shade. Oh, what a lovely couple they made. Put his arms around your waist, held you tight. Kisses I could almost taste in the night. Wondered why I'm not the guy whose silhouette's on the shade. I couldn't hide the tears in my eyes. Silhouettes, 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 silhouettes.
It's certainly reminiscent of that setup of
without the comedic
race.
Payoff to it. You're on the wrong block, right?
Right.
No, he's not dead at all. It's funny that romantic turmoil and trauma is kind of a stock in trade with John in these early years. I don't want to spoil the party for sure. All these other situations, If I Fell, that we've talked about in different songs, I'll Be Back, Not a Second Time, over and over and over again. And maybe when we intellectualize it well, he had rejection issues. He had a traumatic childhood. We could see why his delivering these scenarios would be so much more powerful than, say, if Paul was singing the same thing, or it might not be as believable, or Paul might be projecting too much of an affectation that, you know, he's not really sad. He's Paul. He's Sir Thumbs Aloft. But there's something very real and therefore compelling when John sings about these dark scenarios. The only reason I downgraded a little bit is that I feel like hidden in there somewhere is a much more powerful performance than they pulled off on record. And maybe as a kid, I remembered it as being more powerful. I don't know if I was listening to the Capitol mixes, which is how I got indoctrinated, or what. But nothing I've heard either on the British vinyl or the CD era or the remasters ever felt as powerful as the way I thought the song needed to be or imagined it to be once. It should have had more punch to it than I feel like it does.
Wow. And it's my goal because it has so much punch.
I require more punch, Gary.
Yeah, I'm Joe Frazier and you're Muhammad Ali. It's dramatic. But yeah, and the verses are kind of reserved and then these big, I nearly died.
Especially the Paul vocal in the background on that line. It's like a shriek.
I tried to telephone. They said you were not home. That's a lie. Cause I know where you've been. I saw you walk in your door. I nearly died. Cause you walked hand in hand with another man in my place.
I feel we always underestimate Paul's background vocals. He enhances songs with his background vocals, his harmony vocals. So I really don't have much more to say to it other than I love the drama of it. I don't know. This is probably revisionist history, but there's a little bit of a stalker thing
for sure.
To it. I only appreciate that in hindsight. I don't think I appreciated it as a kid when I heard it. But as an adult, even with the stalker's thing.
That's a standard rock and roll trope that has existed forever. It's like the jealous boyfriend on the outside following up on what the girl's up to now. Who is she with? You know, I think about where that Gin Blossom song, Found Out About You, where he's literally driving by her house and watching when the lights go out, that kind of thing. I get chills when I think about it because I know that's a real thing. And I'm, again, trying to steer clear of the actual harm that comes to people and jealous relationships and that sort of thing. It's just a song, ultimately. But the reason it resonates is because we know, as people living in the world, that this stuff happens. And romantic entanglements are very powerful emotional things that make people do stupid, crazy things. And so, yes, there is this voyeuristic aspect to it. The inspiration was this lighthearted, mistaken joke silhouettes thing that he turns into something much more serious and unresolved, other than he's been wronged again.
Right. And to your point, you know, he's married in a somewhat stable, seemingly relationship with Cynthia, who he's been with for a long time. So the fact that he can conjure up all this romantic drama.
It's very interesting because that was, you know, one of the things that he would wrap Paul with later, writing about boring people doing boring things. The fact that Paul would create characters and write about, this is John doing that very thing, except he's singing it first person like it is about him. And he sells it by the fact that the quality of his voice and his delivery makes you think absolutely he lived through this.
Yeah.
Didn't he say in the Playboy interview about the song specifically, that whole experience, I tried to telephone, they said you were not home, that wasn't part of the UK teenage experience. They didn't call up their girlfriends the way they do in America. He was purely, I think he said something like that. Like, well, basically he's admitting to he pulled it out of his ass just because that was something that he heard teenagers do. But damn, you'd believe he absolutely lived it by his performance.
Yeah, it works for me.
So where's your silver?
My silver, I'll Follow the Sun. I know the song's sort of contrived.
You think so?
Yeah, it feels contrived to me. You know, the song starts with, you know, one day you'll know I'm the one, sort of dissing the girl who's not giving him what he feels she should. And yet it's got this cowboy thing at the end that I'm following the sun. I feel it starts in a romantic place and then it goes to just a cowboy place that I'm moving on and I can't let dust collect on my boots or whatever that be. So that's why I hear it.
Well, what I hear is, again, resorting to a standard rock and roll trope. And we know that this song goes back to at least 1960 because they're doing it at Fourthland on that rehearsal tape. But more recently, I think it came out in 64, the Del Shannon song that we know they were fans of, Del Shannon, Keep Searching, Follow the Sun. So it's a thing that if you're not giving me what I want, I'm going to leave and go wherever life takes me or whatever. So I don't take the lyrics that seriously as him making a personal statement. But what I do hear, and I've always heard, and Paul has a history of this in his songwriting, making the empty threat. You know, if you don't treat me right, I've got another girl, for I've got another girl. You know, that kind of thing. So it never rung genuine to me. It just seems like something that guys may say in teenage relationships. If I don't put you in the ground, as John would say in Run for Your Life, I will at least find another girl who will treat me right. And, you know, if you're the girl not treating him right, you're thinking, well, then go find her.
So it's funny. I start off with my beef that it feels contrived. And yet this is my silver, the beautiful John Paul harmonies. It's a beautiful composition. It just flows sort of to what you talked about earlier, how we both talked about George enhancing Till There Was You. He enhances I'll Follow the Sun as well. His part is not, I don't think, as obvious, but it's beautiful. So he adds up to me, again, a level of sophistication to the song that I don't think was
there.
That is
a very interesting observation for you to make. And I was going to ask you about that because I have fairly recently come across a discussion somewhere, and it was maybe coming out of the Jeff Emmerich book, dissing him and his guitar playing and what he contributed and inability to come up with something on the spot, that sort of thing. And this was given as an example. I don't know if it's specifically in the book or people using this as like an embarrassing George guitar solo. And it's like, I never had reason to think that. And in fact, maybe against naivety, but I was given a guitar at a young age. And that was one of the first guitar solos I figured out how to play. I mean, granted, it's notes on a string sliding up the neck. It's there's nothing to it. But I remember being quite proud of myself. Wow, this sounds just like the record. To the extent that I took guitar anywhere, which wasn't very far at all. I think I quit after trying to figure out Day Tripper. But to me, I never heard and thought, oh, is this terrible? Other solos I could think that about, but this wasn't one of them. I thought it was just a nice little musical embellishment. How difficult or easy it is to play is sort of beside the point.
I totally agree. Who cares? It works.
I never thought twice about it till recently people were like, well, this is just an embarrassment. It's awful. It's like, no, what's wrong with it? Just because it's not flashy or that doesn't diminish the value. I thought it was fine for its setting. It's the same kind of people think Ringo's a lousy drummer because he's not Neil Peart.
Yeah, right. I'm with you. And where are we with
my silver? You?
Is it, we're at your silver.
My silver is Every Little Thing. Always love that song.
Why? Because it's sort of a buried kind of song.
Because I think there is a sweetness about it. Okay. First of all, I guess because it moves me, because I like the sound of it. I like the harmonies. Yeah. I love the guitar solo. I just love everything about it. Now, my first exposure was what is the final track on Beatles 6. And so, again, it's one of these, as it fades, every little thing. It's sort of this unresolved trailing off, which I've already described a fondness for in Beatle albums. So it had that sort of wistfulness going to it. But lyrically, it's got that sweet purity of innocent romance to it. When I'm with her, I'm happy just to know that she loves me. Yes, I know I'm a lucky guy. We've all thought that at some point, haven't we? And so they're there nailing it. But there's something about it that it's not played out. We don't hear it on the radio every day, or it's not become a standard. So it still has a bit of freshness to it, yet doesn't sound dated. That's a good point. Yeah. And then just ancillary to all of that, yes, recording their version of it, which naturally is like 6 minutes long or something. It's like, really? You guys, you masters of weird time signatures and extended soloing and all this complex prog stuff, that's the song of the Beatles you gravitated toward? That's amazing to me.
When I'm walking beside her, people tell me I'm lucky. Yes, I know I'm a lucky guy. I remember the first time I was lonely without her. Can't stop thinking about her now. Every little thing she does for me, yeah. And you know the thing she does for me. When I'm with her, I'm happy.
So clearly it's got levels and charms to it that no matter what angle you're coming for, you can find appealing. At its most basic messaging, what it puts out there, I find it a sweet, charming little love song.
Great. And you and I spoke briefly about this before. If I've got my facts right, I read this somewhere, and I don't remember where I read it, that this is maybe the only instance where someone wrote the song, but the other person sings lead. So as I understand it, Paul wrote the song from start to finish, but he gives the verses to John because he felt John did a better job singing them than he did. Again, I've read that somewhere. Whether it's accurate or not, I don't know.
I do remember reading that about it at some point, and also something like George was absent that day and John played the solo. I don't want to stand on record as declaring that to be fact until I look into it further, but because, you know, lots of things you absorb through the years might not be absolutely true because the research changes or whatever. But I think that I have heard that same thing, and I can't speak to whether that's true or not. I know it was Paul that came up with the at least germ of 8 days a week and then came over to John's, and they sat down and finished it together. And yet John's is the dominant voice on it. And I remember at some point having a realization, wow, this is a really poppy song for John to be singing. So I kind of think of it more as a Paul song, although apparently they both worked on it together. It's not John's stock and trade as far as that stuff goes. You don't hear the tear in his voice there or the emotional turmoil. And it's, you know, it doesn't sound like something he would naturally sing about in a way that Paul would. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So that's, I can go on and on, but you get the picture. What are your thoughts on the song?
I think it's terrific. What I love in particular is just John's verses. It's a sweet love song, to your point, but there's just a little bit of roughness in his voice, which takes it out of the sweetness range and takes it into I mean it range. And that works beautifully for me. And I think it's your gold now because shared my gold.
How'd that happen?
My gold was no reply.
I'm a loser.
It's
a song that I must have heard the record. I must have had Beatles 65 before I actually saw the video of them performing it. I already like the song. Musically, it's pretty amazing because there's the folky element to it, but then it's got the rave up chorus, you know, where the bass is really churning. I always like the harmonica solo followed by the George rockabilly solo. So it's got all these elements I love. Ringo does a terrific job on drums. Great, great Lennon vocal, great harmonies with Paul. And then I saw it for the first time. It was the Shindig performance as part of that David Frost salute to the Beatles from Wide World of Entertainment. And that just like, back when seeing any performance footage of the Beatles at all was the scariest thing. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool. How can anything be cooler than this? It's just had a special place in my heart. Then, of course, you come to find out years later, well, that's one of the first songs where he's sharing his inner life. And I think to his dying day, he believed, part of me thinks I'm a loser, part of me thinks I'm God Almighty. There's a sophistication to it, although I laugh and act like a clown. Beneath this mask, I'm wearing a frown. So he's subconsciously, or maybe consciously, letting slip the difference between his public persona and what he's really feeling. I think that would be more enhanced in the next year or so, where he reached the point early 66, all this that I'm doing, I know there, this is not what I was meant to do. I'm still feeling empty for it. And that's why I paint and make films and write and all that stuff. This Beatle thing, it's not scratching the itch, as it were. To me, it's just a remarkable composition and a fantastic performance.
I agree. It's one I considered for my bronze. It hasn't aged as well for me. I loved it a lot as a kid. You won't like this. The verses, as much as I love them and I love how he sings them, they do feel a little contrived to me. I don't know which came first, Tears of a Clown or this song. I don't know. I just feel like it's a little bit Hollywood. The lyric is a little, the verses are a little bit Hollywood to me. I love the song. I almost picked it as my bronze. And that's the only thing that's sort of, I don't know.
Fair enough. You know, I could see that perspective too. And there'd be other situations where I could see it about other things that other people love. So I'm not going to fault you with that. I could see that. It's interesting. It's another in the latest series of John Lennon romantic travails. I've lost someone who's near to me, and I'm not what I appear to be. So to me, it's got an early ahead of the curve confessional aspect to it, but it's also standard rock and roll teenage romantic tropes as well.
So did you think, when you heard it as a kid, about his mother dying?
No, that thought came later. I didn't have that thought consciously. To me, I just grooved along to the record. You know, it was a nice sound to it. One that would have been in my bubbling under list for the three metals is Babies in Black, which neither one of us mentioned. Yeah. Because that was one that clearly they were fond of because they performed it live a bunch of times.
Yeah.
It's got the great Lennon-McCartney tight harmonies locked together. It's waltz time, so it's different from their normal sort of thing. And the revelation that came along to me years later is this about Astrid.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm just trying to think through it. I don't know. John messed around a lot with colors. You know, please don't wear red tonight. And so I don't know that I'm connected to Astrid, but I like the idea. Why did your mind go there?
Absolutely sounds like it's describing somebody who's mourning somebody that didn't just leave, but maybe is actually dead. She thinks of him, and so she dresses in black. And no, he'll never come back. She's dressed in black.
Wow. That's cool. I never considered that. That's cool. It adds a different layer to think about, as I never thought about that losing you could have been potentially a reference to his mother dying. I'm not sure that I agree that that's there, but I like the nuance.
Right. I mean, that's something that we know potentially could have tied even on a subconscious level to them. You know, everybody talks about the first song he wrote, Paul wrote, I Lost My Little Girl, in the wake of losing his mother. And he absolutely says it out loud. Yeah, I think that was me dealing with my grief. But it's also a little pop, throwaway, nothing. First steps into the songwriting, it could have been about, I'd lost my girlfriend, I lost my love, whatever. So things can have more than one level meaning to the person creating them to it. You know, and certainly George was the master of writing a song that could be a love song to a woman as much as to God.
Right. Which I still have a hard time believing that something is.
You know, revision.
I mean, really?
Yeah. And there's any number of songs where he would say that about, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
If it works for you, George, that's great. Yeah. You know, the exact same thing is John, well, girl, I wrote that about Yoko, but I hadn't met her yet. It's like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Post 68. Right. Sure. All right. So summing up, my bronze, I don't want to spoil the party. My silver, I'll follow the sun. My gold, no reply. And yours are?
My bronze, no reply. My silver, every little thing. And my gold, I'm a loser.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And were we to revisit this at some point down the road, I'm sure the deck would be shuffled somewhat. But that's where it stands now. I feel comfortable with my decision-making and reason for
you're sounding a little defensive.
No, Robert, I honestly okay? don't think people are going to attack us for this. They might be, well, what about? And that's the richness of Beatle albums, because honestly, even an album that commonly Beatles for Sale regarded as maybe more slight than other things they did, there's some fantastic performances. You know, rock and roll music is a dynamite performance.
Yeah, how do we not pick that? What a great song that is. What a great vocal. How Ringo changes up the beat, that we get the added piano that uh-huh. takes the song again a little different place. To your point, to both yeah. right? the riches that are on them, that we don't even pick rock and roll music that I'm sure we both love.
Yeah, in our this you might not think as much of as I do, but I still, from day one, I thought it had a great charm to it. It was almost like there was an aspect of breaking the fourth wall with Honey Don't. Right. You know, the tell rock on that. George for Ringo one time. It's like, I got such a kick out of that as a kid. You're being included in on something. They're not just doing it straight. They're like, oh, they're being Beatles. This is so cool.
I think I felt that too as a kid, and I've lost that feeling somewhere along the line. I get what you're saying. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, and it's so funny, almost like inside joke aspect to it. Of course, we wouldn't know this because it was never intended for public consumption. But when they get around to doing the, some people will take exception to what I'm about to say, but the dreadful, if you got trouble, he's so exasperated with the whole thing. Rock on, anybody. Come on, save me.
Dude, something, anything.
Yes. Yeah. So that's another song for me that in another era might have ranked a little higher just because I think it's such a charming little performance. We'd mentioned Babies in Black as something that's worthy of not being so dismissive. What are your thoughts on Mr. Moonlight? So is it the organ that tanks it for you?
The organ. It's just too cheesy. I mean, God bless John. You know, you'd never think he thought it was cheesy. He just goes at that full throttle, but it doesn't add up for me.
Well, funnily, when you think about the fact of other people that were using that organ at that time in rock and roll, and Brian Wilson comes to mind, maybe making it the centerpiece wasn't the best idea, but I give them props for, we're going to do something different here. And not until I heard the Star Club version of Mr. Moonlight, where it's a guitar solo, of course, I thought, oh, this really is a good song. Mm-hmm. And the vocal is just undeniably, he's invested in it. It's a piece of nonsense as far as composition goes, but he believes it, man, and he's going to sell it to you whether you want it or not.
That's a great observation. He's got to know it's just cheese, but he works it. He's in it heart and soul. So how I won the war aside,
right.
He's a great actor. He puts passion into something that he knows.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something. John Lennon, who was so dismissive of so much that the Beatles did. I mean, I don't know what his 1980 perspective would have been on Mr. Moonlight, but certainly in the moment, he wasn't thinking, oh, this is stupid, Paul. The big question has always been, why the hell didn't Leave My Kitten Alone make the cut?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, yeah. And I can't argue that. Yeah. It's a good point. What's your opinion? Why do you think they picked this
Probably
one?
They were opting, if both things were equal, let's go with the experimental one because we're Beatles and we want to do something different. And maybe people will take to it.
Yeah.
Or maybe 50 years from now, they'll be saying, God, that's cheesy.
You're right. They wanted to go new places, and that's a new place to go.
Oh, sorry. Bye. Leave her alone.
Something About the Beatles, created and hosted by Robert Rodriguez, executive producer Rick Way, title song by The Corgis.
Ladies and gentlemen, now, I'd like to just now have a few words from our recording manager,
Mr. George Madison Martin.
Here he is. George Madison, come here, George. Say a few swinging new fab words for the Christmas market.
It's been a switched on year for George too, fab Beatle people, and we all hope you appreciate it. Here he is.
I landed it out.
He won't talk, Beatle people. He won't.
Gone independent. One, two, three, should all acquaintance be forgot and never more to run.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The regular season is heating up. New stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks. The most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let it fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half and the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.